we recognize that what got the company to where they are now isn't going to get them to the where they want to go with the strategy. And so what are the different ways of thinking and acting and working does everyone need to focus on to get to that point?
Welcome to Cross Pollination. We're back from a hiatus to accommodate other projects. And if you've listened to this show in the past, you know this podcast is about solving practical problems with creativity and innovation, most often by cross-pollinating different skills, talents, fields, and bodies of knowledge. Previously, we've had a business focus. This time around, we're widening our lens to hear from people and organizations of all kinds that are tackling problems that impact the world in different ways. This season, we're kicking things off with something everybody can appreciate at the start of the year, and especially when we're getting back to work, planning and putting those plans into action. Specifically in this episode, we're chatting with Cheryl Lockhart on planning and developing strategy. Cheryl Lockhart is a management consultant and a partner at Omni Consulting based out of Edmonton, Alberta. She helps organizations when they get stuck and need something new to grow, change, and continue to prosper. Cheryl kicks things off with the kind of work she does.
Well, there's a lot of like innovation and creativity going on in more rural areas that it's kind of quiet. Like most of our clients are not names that anyone would know about, but I'm constantly amazed at the creativity and the innovation and just quietly getting things done and building good companies that's going on everywhere. So Omni Consulting, which is my firm with my business partner, Dina Gillies, we have clients all over the world, because I have had clients internationally. But primarily our client base is in Western Canada. So a lot in Edmonton. We work with a lot of larger firms who are in smaller cities or rural regions, interestingly. I think some of those areas are a little bit not serviced well in terms of professional services. And so we seem to kind of attract some of those, which is great because you get a lot more hands-on in those areas.
Typical of a lot of our guests, Cheryl Lockhart's path didn't start out in strategy. Instead, she started off helping companies do business internationally and then branched out from there.
I started consulting over 20 years ago, having come from the government where my frustration was that I couldn't work with clients on a deeper basis. And we could provide guidance to a certain level, and then you kind of had to step back. And I really saw that a lot of organizations needed a little bit more support. And that's also why my career's evolved into the strategy implementation side and business coaching, because a lot of business owners and leaders are kind of working on their own out there, and it's beneficial for them to have a sounding board or someone who can guide them through that process. My clients are looking globally for opportunities. Some of them are very locally focused. They might be in the construction industry as an example, but I think everyone needs to have an eye to what's going on internationally at least. And some of them are a little bit more overt in pursuing those opportunities, either sending products abroad or offering services to international clients. And what I'm seeing is a lot more companies who are partnering perhaps with foreign firms, just even in terms of accessing human capital and, you know, kind of outsourcing, but in more collaborative relationships or bringing people in from other countries to fill in skills gaps.
All this begs the question, what's involved with strategy and implementing strategies? When do companies call up Cheryl and Omni? What are they asking them to do?
When do companies come to me? And it's often when they've hit a certain level and they just can't seem to break through that barrier to get to the next level, whether it's revenue or for a lot of owners, it's less about growth, but more about them being able to step back a little bit and not having so much on their shoulders. And those are the sort of things that cause them to realize something that's laid out is a little bit more maybe what they need. A lot of times it's a business owner who's grown their team to a certain size where all of a sudden they can't convey their desires and their wishes for the business to everyone in a clear way. And not everyone is as clearly aligned as they might have been before as you start adding new team members. And I think they're kind of looking for that rigor that comes with a strategic planning process that forces them to really look at all of the things that they want to accomplish up against the resources they have available to them, whether it's financial or people or other resources, and then make some really difficult decisions about what they can or can't do. And going back to the international piece, I find that companies who undertake strategic planning and or look at international markets in the context of a bigger strategy are usually the ones that are a little bit more successful, because they've weighed, well, should we pursue this market opportunity in the United States, or should we take the time to upgrade our, you know, our ERP or something like that? Like, most organizations can only take on one significant project at a time, or maybe two or three, but it requires that they map out that process. That what I go through is more than just taking all those ideas and putting them down on paper, but instead we work through this process of mapping out when they would happen and putting dollars to that as well.
What do companies take away from that strategic planning process?
I think we're all guilty of wanting to take on too much and getting, especially in that strategic planning process, you can get quite excited and rejuvenated by new ideas. I try to allow that, but also inject a little bit of realism, or at least thinking about how that can happen, because there can be other ways to make it happen. And sometimes you just have to look at it differently. It's interesting because I think most people want a lot of flexibility in their work, but they want to know what their expectations are. And that's what the planning does. And it's intended to be a tool that you can come back to and say, this isn't what we discussed, so we need to say no to something right now. Or if we do say yes, then at what expense? I try to, like I said, try to make it, what maybe doesn't make it exciting, but makes it more real, is by asking the difficult questions about implementation and what's that really going to look at like in the end.
So those are some of the situations where strategic planning can be really helpful. I asked Cheryl, what are some of the challenges that go with planning strategy and with implementing it?
An owner gets to a point where they have themselves, and they might have two or three or four more senior people who perhaps don't have a lot of experience in senior management. They've grown with the owner. So you might have an accountant who's all of a sudden managing revenues, where they might be more, you might need a CFO, or you might have an operational person who was on the floor, and now all of a sudden they're managing a team of 15 people, and they don't have those skills or that experience to do that effectively. And so then it's creating problems within the team. So it's partly leadership development, I mean, which is a whole other thing, but part of it is the frameworks and systems that everyone agrees to. So it creates those certainties within the company. And I do very few situations where I just facilitate for a day or two, pull something together, and then don't come back. Because unfortunately, those are the plans that often don't get implemented, because there's no system behind it for what's next, whether it's mapping out the projects. And what I'm finding is a lot of clients, or a lot of even companies, that's what they do for their revenue generation. So they maybe deliver, or even non-for-profits. I was working with a not-for-profit recently who does a lot of research, and they get grants and things like that. So they're delivering projects all the time. But the concept of internal project management for those things that will build the organization isn't thought of in those terms. And so people get stuck because there's so many of them and they're not prioritized and laid out in a sort of a logical way, that everyone just gets caught up in the other types of, you know, the regular day-to-day work.
How does leadership development connect to implementing strategy?
We have a leadership development program we use with some clients, that it's internal. So a leadership team or the team might go through it together for new leaders typically. And we also have another program called Strategy Activation, which is more about, if you've got a new strategy in place, we recognize that what got the company to where they are now isn't going to get them to where they want to go with the strategy. And so what are the different ways of thinking and acting and working does everyone need to focus on to get to that point?
Before Omni and the companies they work with get to implementing strategy, they focus on strategy activation. It's one of the easily overlooked components that comes between developing a strategy and putting it into practice. Here's what that looks like.
So I call it the spark that really is what's needed to ignite the strategy execution to actually make it happen. It's easy to map out where you want to go and even create that roadmap on how to get there. So, you know, a Gantt chart and action plans and all of those things, which, you know, I love doing. But what I found is that there was always this gap because the same, you know, habits would come up of, we'll put that off, or we have to put out this fire first. And instead, people needed to start thinking differently, especially with those new leaders that I was talking about, think more systems oriented or more holistically rather than within their department, or perhaps think a little bit more results driven for the organization. And how does what they're doing on a day-to-day basis tie to the business outcomes, and kind of make, help them connect those dots in the context of their own work. Well, I was just going to say, and I think one of the things we do start off with in that strategy activation conversation is that there's a gray zone between the current state of the organization and where it wants to go. And yes, we have a plan. We say where we want to go and how we're going to measure progress, but in that gray zone in the middle, and it's a change theory, and the idea is it's a zone of learning and it's a zone of group development. So everybody's confused in that zone. You're not the only one, and we're figuring it out. I say to clients, you know, we're lucky if at the end of the strategic planning process, we've got it 80% right. Like we could spend more time on it, but it's diminishing returns at that point. And even things like surveying the market or that, you know, looking externally is better integrated into the strategy than rather than at a one point in time before you do the 3-year process and then not looking at it again over the next 3 years. It is uncomfortable, right? Especially for leaders who feel that, you know, that's their job to know what it is. So part of it is just acknowledging it up front that there's the gray zone. A lot of it is breaking things down into smaller pieces and asking very clearly, okay, what do we want to learn at the beginning of this phase? So with strategic planning, a lot of times new initiatives will come up. It'll be, okay, we want to, I'll go back to the international. We want to expand into the UK, and we've got a goal of 10% of our revenue in 5 years should come from overseas revenue. That's very daunting. And so what we try and do is break that into phases or mini projects. So the very first project might be just market research. And what do we want to know here? And we can't know anything more than that. And so I'd like to encourage companies to use a very simple project charter to just bring that scope in. Cause too often then you end up at the end of something and someone says, well, I thought we would know exactly what market entry channels we were going to take and who we were going to work with at the end of this phase. And that's not the case, right? You're just taking baby steps, and then you have go, no go stage points at that point, which probably, you know, very familiar in the startup world, right? Like it's got to be points where you just decide to say yes, or you to continue, or you say no, but you don't wait till you get to the very end. Otherwise you've invested so much time and effort to get there.
That often requires a bit of a shift in thinking internally in organizations. Cheryl explains what that means.
Often requires understanding some new business concepts as well, that it's surprising so many people work in a business or even in a not-for-profit that has to bring in some business principles just to sustain themselves. And we don't always have that background of what those business concepts might be. So something like the idea of project management or the idea of setting key performance indicators or metrics for success and being a little bit creative about what some of those might be. And even just like that strategic thinking needs to come into it. And so it's really not fair to expect an organization, so, you know, a company that's maybe said within this new strategic plan, we want to grow by 50%. Maybe we want to go from 10 million to 15 million in 3 years. That's a huge shift. And you can't expect your team to get there without providing them some resources.
Because creativity is a topic we talk a lot about on this podcast, one thing I wanted to know from Cheryl is how creativity enters into the process of developing, activating, and executing strategy.
I really enjoy it when clients really think about what it is they're trying to measure and what would resonate with people. So yes, there's KPIs relating to financials usually, right? And that's the easy one to measure. What I find with a lot of small and mid-sized businesses, they don't have a lot of systems to measure a lot of KPIs. And part of the implementation process might be actually creating the systems to do that. But I've worked with companies in the past who've used some really sort of things that are meaningful to them that allow them to get to a goal without putting a lot of effort into creating those systems. So I had a client that was a family business, and their KPI was to be able to take a family holiday for 1 week within 3 years, and the business would still run, that their team was strong enough that the entire family, and there was a lot of them, it was multi-generational and many different members of the family, could do that and feel comfortable with it. And they did, which was fantastic. And so I thought that was a really neat KPI for a family business to have. And it was one of many, but it was quite interesting. Yeah. And I've had other ones that have used, and these might be more departmentally related, but just like the shop rag test, like how many at any point in time, how many rags or things out of place on the shop floor are there? And that's a leading indicator of maybe another issue. Yeah. And I'm starting to work a little bit more with business owners, just kind of on the side, and asking them to set some that maybe their team isn't really aware of, just because they don't want to get the team focused on the wrong things, but help the business owner understand if they're on the right track. And so part of it is similar, like they can take some time away from the business and not have to be checking in constantly, vacations, like we all hear about, go away for a week and see what happens, that kind of thing. But some of it also is if they can take some time and spend more time on their pet projects. You know, if someone's very interested in R&D and just spend time tinkering on new products that maybe won't lead to revenue generation, but they've actually got time in their workday to do that.
Again, something we've heard a lot about on the show is that thinking more creatively sometimes needs a bit of a different mindset than the one we typically use to do our work on a daily basis. I asked how companies can shift into a mindset that will let them think of ways to create KPIs, key performance indicators, that will help them measure the success of the strategies they're pursuing. Cheryl talked too about the importance of companies and their leaders considering their company culture, stepping outside of the hustle culture mindset that's been idealized for a long time in business, and thinking really in depth about what works best for a particular company.
I just don't think it serves anybody really, because it's very focused on hustle culture. A lot of it is, and it doesn't free up the white space that a lot of people need to be creative or just to think about their business differently and their employees, right? The more they can think, free up their mind from, we have to do it this way because this is how business is done, the more they can free up their mind to, my employees can also maybe do things differently and bring value and just kind of bring that to the surface for everyone. It resonates well when we talk about creativity and what it means for them, and not necessarily what there's a general defined idea of creativity of creating something completely new. I don't feel that I'm a super creative person myself necessarily, but I think it also comes with just knowing yourself and some vulnerability about what you like and tapping into that. So the idea of someone who wants to just do some R&D on the side, or an example might be, I just want to be able to mow the lawn at my business and do that because I like sitting on a ride-on lawnmower and it's relaxing for me and creating the time for that. I think it's the idea of, what do you want out of your business, instead of falling into these traps of what we see in business media and what we think a business leader should be. I think that's really quite, it's really unhelpful. And a lot of leaders think they have to follow that path. So it's just asking the questions, what could your path be? Yes, in the end, you have to be profitable, but there's no one way to get there necessarily. And just explore different ways to do that. What I think makes a lot of people afraid when you talk about creativity, like in strategic planning, we do a lot of developing the values and what does that mean with an organization. And creativity can come out sometimes, but it's interesting how people interpret that. And I think when you provide the parameters around the strategy and you encourage the creativity within that, that's when people flourish, because they want those outer boundaries, but then they want the flexibility and the confidence to be a little bit more creative on those internal boundaries. And so, you know, there might be a direction to do X, Y, Z. Perhaps it's, you know, improved customer engagement. Improved customer engagement scores might be a KPI, and that might be measured by a survey. Or I had one client, we tried to be a little more creative, and he just committed to taking every client out for lunch once a year and then just asking casually in conversation, you know, so on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate our service? Kind of weaving that in, and then he would make a note of it, and that was great for him. But that idea of then what does improving engagement mean within for that individual? And that's where the strategy activation comes in. We've got conversations around that where we talk about, you know, there's a B2B elements of value. How do you bring value to your client? And there's something like 40 different ways you can do that on that this list. Well, you need to understand what's important to them. It's not probably the same thing that's important to you. Like some people think, well, giving away hockey tickets is a value. For a lot of people, they don't want that. So it's about finding what your clients value and meeting them there. And it doesn't have to be expensive. It doesn't have to be a big thing. And we have that conversation. What's comfortable for the employee to try and bring that value to them?
So all this makes strategy sound really complicated. At the end of the day, though, it needs to mean something useful and usable both to the company's leaders and equity holders and to the employees who carry out the strategy on a daily basis in their work.
Again, that idea of what worked before may not work going into the future. And how do you know unless you're checking in? And as part of that conversation, we ask everybody in the organization to put that client hat on. And we talk about what the 7 different roles of account management are and which hat do you play? You might be in accounts receivable and think you have no role to play, but you do. And even asking the right questions to feed into the strategy, everybody can play a part in that. Yeah, it's very much about what does this strategy mean to me in my day-to-day work? And because otherwise they're just it's just a big document, and we always try to do a 1-page strategy, so at least it's easily referenceable. But again, it's easy to dismiss certain metrics or certain goals as, well, that's the sales department and I'm in maintenance and that has nothing to do with me. But it does. And that's what the training, the strategy activation training can do, and those conversations can do.
I asked Cheryl for her top few pieces of advice for organizations when it comes to developing, activating, and executing strategy.
The one other thing I was thinking is that there's a lot of power in team training and having your entire team learning the same concepts as a group, as opposed to sending a couple of people away for, you know, client service training or leadership training is individuals or 1 or 2 people, because they can discuss all of this in the context of the organization very specifically and use specific examples, and they grow together. And that creates that culture and teamwork that sometimes feel a little bit soft, or it's like, how do we build our culture? And there's no one way. But having everybody come together and talk about common challenges is a really good way to start. I think maybe just more the emphasis on involving the whole team in the implementation of the strategy. It's not really practical or useful necessarily for everyone to be involved, even in a small company. I've found in the past that sometimes a company owner will want to bring everyone on board as a learning opportunity, and it can be, but it's often a little bit daunting. And there's a lot of other opportunities for people to weigh in on how to get to where the organization wants to go without being involved in that very initial phase. And so the idea is, think about developing your strategy only as the very beginning. And that's the easy part in a lot of ways. And then what are the systems that you're going to need to get it across the finish line? And then most importantly, what tools does your team need to do that? I've seen a lot of, well, I guess one of the things I've seen since COVID is companies who have undertaken the strategic planning process, like even within that first year, have undergone huge shifts in their teams. And I've seen a couple of clients where they've had almost 100% turnover in their, you know, their more corporate staff, because people weren't keeping up with where the organization wanted to go and weren't maybe, either they didn't have the skills or they just didn't want to shift the way they were thinking, and which was unfortunate. In some cases, that's okay, but sometimes it's unfortunate because things were just moving too fast for them and they weren't given enough opportunity to maybe weigh in a little bit on, okay, this is too much in this role right now, and maybe we need to step back, or even just being given the chance to have some ownership of it and feel pride in it instead of it feeling like something that's been imposed on them from above. And I think that's the key, is that it ideally it's something that charges people up, because it is a little bit different than the day-to-day, and it's the opportunity to express some creativity or express some things that you've learned in other jobs and bring that into this organization.
So that's all for this episode, all about developing, activating, and executing strategy. A big thanks to Cheryl Lockhart for joining us on the show. And if you'd like to find out more about her work and Omni Management Consulting Alliance, you can check them out at https://omniconsulting.ca. We'll also include a link to that in the show notes. Please join us for our next episode on AI and accessibility. About 20% of Canadians report having one or more disabilities. Dr. Mahadi Osukai, the VP of Research at CNIB, the Canadian National Institute for the Blind, gives us his views on how AI technologies are shaping up when it comes to accessibility for everyone. Thanks for listening, and if you enjoyed the show, please do leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It's much appreciated. Until next time.